to the What the Folk Sunland Preview podcast. I am severely jet lagged, but I'm going to try and get through with the help of both Justin and Peter from Watford's Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast as we discuss potentially the most pointless game in the history of football. Justin, I'll ask you first. How are you doing, mate? You all right?
Very good. Yeah, yes. Nice, nice to be back, Graham. Nice to be back.
It's same been time a while. As last year. Well, same
Isn't
time.
It?
Yeah.
It's quite a long gap. Yeah, no, very good, mate. Very good.
Peter, how are you?
But yeah, very good. Thank you very much. It was lovely being here previously with a game to go. And hey, here we are again. Championship writ large.
And nothing has changed apart from everything. But Justin, I'll go with you first. Sunderland are 13th, Watford are 15th. So the biggest question I've got for you, and this is the best way to start the podcast, do any of us really care about Saturday?
No, nobody cares really. It's the season's ended, isn't it? Really, we're both safe. We're not playing for anything. The only thing perhaps we are going to be playing for is we've got a new manager. Tom Cleverley's been given the full time job at Watford, so it'd be nice for Tom to get a win as his first game as confirmed head coach. It'd be nice for us as well because we haven't seen a home win since November. So that's what we've got to play for. But in terms of points and stuff, yeah, you're right. It's just pointless, to be honest.
You said no home win since November, and I bet you like everyone's looking at who's next on the fixture list, and every Sunderland fan now is going, ha ha, brilliant. Now we know what the score is going to be. It's over. But Peter, I think I always listen in. I'll always watch the game. I'll attend the games. We always care a bit, but it does feel completely pointless, doesn't it?
Yeah, entirely. But I mean, it's championship football in the middle of the table. It's the end of the season. Everybody's waiting to do whatever they want to do when they haven't got to kind of obligate themselves to bang their heads against a brick wall or either Vicarage Road or the Stadium of Light, hoping that these bastards actually get their arse into gear and actually do something. So yeah. I mean, I would take Justin's "we haven't won since November" and add a "we haven't won since November" for crying out loud. We do want this because it's our one chance to go into the end of the season with something to kind of look forward to. And I don't know whether or not the club thought, well, that might not happen, so let's announce it now rather than after Saturday. But hopefully there'll be a feel-good factor for it and we'll kind of see what we can do. But yeah, it's all a bit meh.
I'll stick with you because there's always stuff to chat about with Watford, which is kind of the benefit for this late in the season podcast where it's tough to find anything recent or decent to talk about. But there's always stuff for Watford. But we'll start with the most recent game, a riveting 0-0 draw with Hull City, but not a bad result. How was the performance?
Well, the good news for Sunderland fans is the fact that if we do draw 0-0, it will be our fourth 0-0 in five games. What I can say about the Hull City 0-0 is it was significantly more exciting than the Preston 0-0, not quite as good as the Ipswich 0-0. So we kind of quite enjoyed it, but the highlight was an excellent half-time, which involved a good friend of ours, and you will get to see, and any Sunderland fans who are going to be watching at half-time, we'll see a thing called the Mr. Q, our sponsor, Centre Spot Challenge. This may be the highlight of the game because it is so mind-bogglingly awful. You basically get three people, none of whom have seemingly seen a football before, try to kick the ball from the penalty spot to basically land it on the centre spot. Trust me, hardly anybody has got it into the centre circle, but one of our pod family managed to get it near the centre circle on Saturday. That was the best thing we possibly saw. Does that kind of give you an impression exactly how good the game was? Probably does.
Yes. Yeah. 100% actually. Yeah, it really does. And I think it's funny you mentioned 0-0 draws. We've had a 1-0 win and a 1-0 defeat in the last two games. But prior to that, we've had a 0-0, a 0-0, a 5-1 defeat, and I think a 0-0 before that. So I kind of feel where the prediction's going to go. So if you want to stay for the end for the predictions, there's no point. And it's going to be a 0-0. And I did want to touch on recent form, Justin. You love a 0-0, a bit like us, kind of. 3 0-0s in the last four, sandwiched in between a 3-2 defeat at Southampton in the 99th minute. Look, it's not the most riveting form, but what have been the takeouts? Because I suppose there's still stuff to chat about. We still try and work out what this means going into next season. What does it mean, if anything?
Well, for this season, it means that Those are games that we would have lost under Ismail, I suspect. So we're turning that into a positive because we have looked, you know, not unbeatable, but we've looked better. The Southampton game, like you say, was a peculiar game because we were 2-0 down in no time, and then we brought it back to 2-2. And at that point, there was only one team that was going to potentially go on and win it, and it wasn't Southampton. And then, you know, some rather strange refereeing decisions and what looked suspiciously like a handball on the 99th minute in 97 worked that one out. And suddenly we're looking at a loss. So I think on the whole, we've certainly picked up more points than we would have done if we'd kept Valerian Ismail as manager. For next season, though, it all depends on recruitment, really. If the club are going to recruit smartly, because they haven't done that for about the last four seasons. So it needs to be smart recruitment. It needs to be players that Cleverley wants. I imagine, although I don't know, we might be seeing a few more from the academy appear in the team, because that's where he's come from, and you think he probably knows the players and knows if they're ready to make the leap. So I think that's positive. But yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? By October, we could be, you know, looking at a new manager. It's Watford, after all. I hope not. I hope we give Cleverley a go. Lots of people saying get behind him. And I'm on board with that. So let's see.
You could be really lucky, and you could go back into his like archive of ex-Man United players and bring in some experienced heads like Darren Gibson.
Well,
he can drink. We know that much.
That's only if Wes Brown and John O'Shea aren't available, of course. So that's fine.
I love them. Trust me. Great. Both of them. Love Wes. Love John. I'll stick with you on this one, Justin, but I want to fire the question at both, so I'll give it you first, but feel free to follow on after this, Peter. I think, look, from the outside looking in, you look at Watford and you go, yeah, they just change managers all the time. That's how you look at it. You don't even look at the form, if I'm completely honest with you. So I remember from the outside looking in, Valerian Ismail was kind of a solid appointment. Then he got sacked in the March, and I remember he was on the back of a bad run of form, and as soon as I seen he lost a few, I was like, Pons was going to like pie him off. Which he did, of course. But how will you look back on Ismail's time in charge? Like, what was it in comparison to the rest? Because from the outside looking in, you just go, oh, that's a Watford second manager, but there's obviously more to it.
Well, to start with, I thought it was fairly solid. I mean, we, you know, within 45 minutes of the season, we were 4-0 up against QPR, and you think, well, this looks like it's all going to be rather marvellous. And then, you know, there was some strange sort of nil-nils, and then we lost to Blackburn and all kinds of strange things happened. And then our away form picked up. We hadn't won an away game for, I can't remember the amount of weeks, but it seemed like forever. And we had a nice little run in sort of November, December, where we started winning away games convincingly. So we thought, okay, well, you know, sort the home form out and you're going to be all right. But it was just awful, really, towards the end. It was like watching a dead man walking. He was sacked, I think, 2, 3, maybe 4 games too late. They should have pulled the trigger after the Huddersfield game. So I'm not going to look back massively fondly of the Ismail era. I think on the whole, you know, if you're going to compare him on a scale of who was better for you, Hodgson or Ismail, you're going to go Ismail every time. You know, because there are degrees in these things. But I think it was, yeah, I mean, getting Cleves in was probably the right move, but it was just a little bit too late, I think.
What were your thoughts on it, Peter, with the Ismail situation and the time he had?
Well, it's always nice to see Justin kind of compare everybody to Roy Hodgson, because I'm pretty sure if you kind of gave him, I don't know, Stalin or Pol Pot, he would probably be coming down hard on Roy Hodgson if he had his chance with Justin. Yeah, no, with Valerian Ismail, we started off the season for the first 45 minutes on fire. Thereafter, it went a little bit to pot. And then suddenly we had a run from, it was literally late October, right up until 23rd of December, where we kind of had a late and undeserved win against Blackburn. We weren't playing out of our skins, but we were getting lots of results. And from the end, from literally Boxing Day through until he was fired, he basically got two wins. One was a fortunate one against QPR, and the other one, which was basically, if he hadn't have got this win, it would have been six defeats on the spin before he went, was against Rotherham. And we all know that, you know, dear old Rotherham, you know, we know people there, love them to pieces, lovely club, but this season they have not been at it. And so, no, he basically, we got to a point we were on kind of 45 points and looking at the bottom of the table, and we genuinely couldn't see where we were going to get the points to stay up, you know, genuinely. And Watford fans have been trying to be patient because, you know, we know it's the walking joke. It's easy to do it. You know, it's Watford. Of course, they're onto their fifth manager. We managed to get through till what time? Sometime in March or whatever it was. And then he just had to go. And Tom came in and cleverly has in his, what, seven games, he's won one, lost one, and the rest he's all drawn. But that one win was on the game, that on his next game, on his first game in, and he took the pressure. It wasn't pretty, but he stopped us doing the things that Ishmael had us doing, which were odd, because anybody who'd seen Ishmael manage at Barnsley or at West Brom or at Besiktas or any time in his career would have seen him play 3-4-3. He knocks it long. He plays off a big striker. You pick up the second and third ball, and then you go and press the team, high up, and you try to win it. You may get down on the counter attack. Completely changed with Watford. He went to 4-3-3, and we were all about trying to build it up very, very slowly. Under Tom, we've moved the ball a lot quicker. I think Valerian Ishmael will be looked back on in terms of the positive, as he was the one who went in and hit the culture in the dressing room head on. There were four players who got either dropped from the pitch to the bench, or from the bench completely out of the squad, because they were turning up late for meetings, like in the afternoon when they'd been there all day. They were still walking in 20 minutes late, and it was just, I don't give a monkeys. And he addressed that and got that done. And he's quite a big, scary looking geezer, is Ishmael. That's probably the thing he did most, because he's dealing with a reduced palette of players for Watford, because of course this is our second season out of the Premiership. You know how that goes. You're cutting and shredding all over the place. We kind of started to like some of the bits of the team in that good run, but when he lost the dressing room, and he was talking badly about individual players, and he would ostracize those players. He would ostracize one of our good young right back, Ryan Andrews, and things came out, and we're trying to be kind of publicly, you know, kind of public relations managed, but it was not a good look. And he hadn't won a game at home. And at the end of the day, if we can't see where the points are coming from, we had to make that change. Tom had done a sterling job with the under-18s and the under-17s, which he was looking after as well. And the club decided, because he's been there a long time, he was a more trusted pair of hands to get a result at that Birmingham game. Because the next games, which he's got draws out of, were Leeds, West Brom, Preston, Ipswich, Southampton and Hull. So it was all against those top teams, which is why we were really frantically scared. If we didn't get a result against Birmingham, we could seriously be pulled into that bottom three. Even though we were in and around mid-table position, we knew where we were and how we were, and he's made a good job of it. So I think Valerian, people will go, yeah, he was one of those Pozzo ones, didn't do brilliant, but he did do that dressing room bit, which was vital for the culture of the club.
I think it's interesting when you look through the managers that have took charge of Watford. You've got like a lot of 20s and 15s and all that. But Ishmael got 48 games. He only won 13 of them, so 27%. But when I think
they tried not to sack him, because the chairman, or the, no, let me just correct that, the owner hadn't spoken to the fans in 11 years. And we were involved in Justin organised the campaign to try to get to talk to him last pre-season. And it was brilliant. Justin did a great job with that. We got it in. I ended up chairing it. And we had a number of supporters talking to him about it. And you could see they were really pleased to have him. And you could also see that what they've been trying to do all season was go against what is their natural nature, which is to go for a manager bounce. But of course, if you sack the manager every 2 months, there isn't a manager bounce, you know, because they're just used to it. And what it meant was we had that culture in the dressing room, which is, I'm not going to listen to you because in 2 months you'll be gone. And he did change that. And now Tom's come in, and I think he probably wins a little bit more popularity within the dressing room. He's a little bit closer to the players. And he's, you know, let's face it, he has walked the walk in terms of having a professional career. And of course, being, you know, 17 probably helps as well.
I wanted to ask Justin, because from the outside looking in, and you'll know a lot more, and I think we actually spoke at one point about it, but like a lot's changed since then. He's got the same win rate, Ishmael, as what Rob Edwards did. Now, obviously, look at the Rob Edwards and you go, would it have been better if we kept him? And obviously, he goes to your rivals, and then that royally pisses everyone off at Watford because he goes and gets somebody promoted. But did the success of Rob Edwards at your club's rivals, was that part of why you think that maybe Ishmael stayed longer than expected, because he thought, I can't be having a manager leaving us and being successful again, because his win rate's exactly the same to the percentage, which is kind of weird. Did Rob Edwards sort of change the culture a little bit as well because of what happened?
Well, not really, because we had two other managers between Edwards going to
him
up the road and and Ishmael. So, yeah, we had Bilic and Wilder, didn't we? So I don't think that's true. It rankled with us watching them do well. I mean, it hurt. And then, you know, part of that was losing 2-0 at their place with Edwards in charge. It's, you know, that's not a nice place to be. So, no, I don't think that's necessarily a factor why Ishmael was kept on longer. I think, I don't really know why he was kept on longer. As I say, he was given a new contract in October. So I think it would have made it harder for them, or an improved contract, shall we say, in October. So he, you know, in 2 months, he was seen to be good enough to acquire an improved contract. I think they would have looked really stupid if they'd sacked him off after doing a move like that. So for me, that's probably why he was kept on a little bit longer than he perhaps would normally have been. So yeah, I don't think it's anything to do with Rob Edwards, though.
More just something that's very, very annoying.
I think if you'd have divided up his defeats along the line of his wins and his draws, because he literally was kind of, you know, it was all or nothing in every single one of them. If you'd have divided them up, he may have stayed. But the problem was that when you've got 7 games that we lost out of, what, 10 in there, and 2 of those were draws, so we literally had, you know, kind of a 1 win, then you're looking at the trend and you're looking at the likelihood. So I think it really forced their hand. I think if they could have done, they would have tried to have kept him for the year and been able to turn back around to the fans and said, well, you wanted us to try to, you know, kind of keep with him, and we've done that, and this is where we are. What do we do now? Kind of where do we build? With Rob Edwards, I mean, personally, when he went, we were all surprised because he hadn't been given enough time, you know, to do it, because you can have the same percentage rate, but something over 40 games versus something over 10 is kind of a difficult one to kind of judge. However, during his time with us, I don't think Rob Edwards really showed very much. I don't, you know, we were all surprised in terms of the timing that it went, but in the other way, we weren't surprised because we're Watford and they go, and that's what happens. I think what was the genuine surprise was that he did so well at Luton, and he had the sense to go in and not do too much, if that makes sense. He was also a 3-5-2. Manager. We didn't give him players for him to really play his 3-5-2. We saw a left wing back playing on the right, you know, who was just pointless. He goes there and they get him to kind of follow on from what's his chops. I can never remember his name now. I tried to block it out. The previous Luton manager, who was the Nathan Jones, who was a 3-5-2. They get him in for a 3-5-2. He does the sensible thing. He keeps the ship going. He keeps them happy. And of course, you know, they get to go up by, you know, by the skinniest of margins. It came down to that last penalty in that kick. But fair play, you can't knock it. And they are probably the organic kind of blueprint for a team without an awful lot of money as to what they do, and fair play to them. But of course, if there were any Luton fans listening to this, I would deny all knowledge of saying it.
Hopefully not, for your
absolutely
sake.
Absolutely. Oh, don't worry. They give us grief nonetheless. That's quite right too.
There'll be reasons I can kind of understand behind it, Justin, behind Cleverley's appointment, because obviously he's been confirmed today, but up until 2 hours ago, we both had interim managers. Now, we've got 2 wins in 13 since Mike Dodge took interim charge. I like Mike Dodge as a bloke, but I think, well, the numbers speak for themselves. If he was appointed permanent manager, I'd stab my own eyes out because it's not going to work. Cleverley's 1-1, drew 5, lost 3. Now, those draws have been against good teams, 2 teams in the top 6 in the recent weeks, so there's more context to it than that. But I suppose if you look at the stats and he's only 1-1, give or take, and he's been appointed manager. It's surprising, but can you understand the reasons behind it? And I'm assuming, from what you said previously, it's a favourable appointment from the fan base.
Yeah, it is, and I can understand it, actually. I think there's a confidence about him. There's a likability about him. Fans have certainly warmed. Well, I mean, fans obviously know Tom Cleverley, right, because he came to us in 2009. I think he got player of the season that season. I seem to remember him collecting it on crutches, didn't he, Pete? He walked on with a busted leg, if I remember rightly. Yeah. Obviously, he came back to us, I would think, was it almost straight away 2015 or was it a little bit later, maybe 2016, 2017? Regardless, he's been knocking around for the last 5 or 6 years at Watford. He's one of those players that always gave everything. He pops up with the odd crucial goal here and there. When he retired at the end of the season, and he had a pretty torrid season last season, he scored a goal and then got injured in the celebration. And then we didn't see him again. That was the end of that. I think he might have come on for 20 minutes or something and just, nah, he can't do it anymore. So it was announced he was going to be taking over the academy in the summer, and everyone thought, well, that's a good appointment. And here we are now with him as a full-time head coach. So, I have to say a lot of the managers that we've had haven't been likable over the past 10 seasons. There's been many that you just think, I hate to bring up Hodgson again, but he was certainly one. Wilder wasn't all that likable, although he did tell a few home truths and maybe get some things changed. So we've now got a manager that, broadly is liked, and broadly people are going to get behind. That hasn't happened for a while, so fingers crossed, we'll see. Like I say, come back to us in October and we'll let you know.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't see that they've confirmed how long he's been given a contract to. Is that correct? So I haven't really put a timescale on it.
So that, I believe, is right. I think what you're saying is right. I've just seen a couple of messages bouncing around some people that we know saying, has that been confirmed? So no, I don't think it has been confirmed as yet. It'll probably be another contract extension in October, and then he'll be sacked in December. Sorry, that's the cynic in me.
They're all in contract situations.
what is most likely to be the case, even if it is a 3 or a 4 year contract, there will be exit points. So, for example, when Ishmael had his contract extended, we were in 21st place. We'd been, as we've already said here, we've been sacking people because we've been in 11th place before. But he gets to 21st place, and we gave him an extended contract, and the club made a big hurrah and hooray about it. And fine. And when Justin said, he kind of went, well, actually, it was kind of improved terms. What they effectively did when they did that was, yes, they put him on improved terms. Yes, he had a longer opportunity, but it was all conditional from the club's, kind of club agreeing at the end of each season. So effectively, when he did go, he didn't go for a great deal of money because of the number of managers that we have fired over the last, 4 years. We see 1 year we paid just over £8 million out in compensation. And, as match day revenue for a team with, 20 to 21,000, that literally took out all of the match day revenue for that particular year, which meant us being wholly dependent, as we really were, because of the imbalance of it on TV revenue. So we kind of got away with it, but the moment we fell out of the Premier League, that wasn't working. And of course, now where we are is having to cut our cloth accordingly. So if we're looking to, especially next season, if we're looking young and cheap, so to speak, certainly my look, I've attempted since my late 30s, never managed to pull it off. It will be kind of understandable because we've got to cut our cloth. We've got to become an organic football club, because until you get to the Premiership, you can't rely on that mountain of cash. And we found out that was actually just a money swap anyway. What we bought in TV revenue goes out to the players. It's very much a mirage. It's not very real in the Premier League. I'll take the Championship all day and every season.
When you look at, because it's really hard to sum up Watford managers' times, there's been that many of them, Peter, to be honest, and you'll know this, I don't need to tell you, but I think the highest win percentage in like the past couple of decades looks like Jokanović, which was a while ago and a lot of managers ago. Things have obviously massively changed since then, and things have changed at Watford. But what would, like, say by the time Tom Cleverley leaves, where are you at now? What would he need to do to be classed as a successful appointment?
Oh, that's a question.
I think it's a great question. I think a successful appointment has almost been redefined at Watford. It's the other side of that coin. You can come to Watford and fail and have absolutely no impact on your credibility within the management game, because the perception is, well, they'll sack you anyway. Everybody's going to have that. And you look at the number of players that we bought in, the number of managers that we bought in and we've let go. Look at Jokanović. He came in, took us up, and he wasn't sacked, but they failed to renew his contract because they went, oh no, he wants too much money. He just wanted to have a Premier League or something approaching a Premier League kind of figure. Having bought the club, 120 million or however many it was, we stayed there for 5 years. Their way of looking at it is, what got you here won't necessarily get you there. And they looked at Jokanović and said, we think you can get us up, we don't think you can keep us there. And if you look at his Fulham track record, maybe there's a point there. It all started in that particular season, because we started with a manager called Cennino, who they knew from Italy, but they forgot to say that he was an utter psychopath. I mean, he was just delusional. We then appointed a guy called Billy McKinley, who had two games in charge before they went, well, he wasn't really the appointment, so now we're appointing Oscar Garcia. And oh no, it was the other way. It was Oscar Garcia. He had a heart issue. Then so he was basically in for about three games before he was kind of wheeled off in the same way as kind of Tony Mowbray at Birmingham. And obviously, we wish him all the best. But it was like, right, okay, he's gone off. We then brought in Billy McKinley. He was there for two games, and they then kind of shuffled him along. Bearing in mind, he won one and drew one. It seemed a little harsh, but okay, he's gone. And then they brought Jokanović in, and I think there's a certain level of, bringing in managers that if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. If you come to Watford, it's going to be relatively short-lived. The hope is, and getting back to that original question, is in order to make a success of it, is what Tom's got in his favour is he's been about as many years as Justin just mentioned there. He knows exactly what is what. He knows how things are done, and he knows who are who. He's had those relationships already cultivated. The number one question is, what is his relationship with Gino Pozzo, the owner? Because Rob Edwards, and I'll say to anybody here, he was an appointment of our chairman and CEO, Scott Duxbury. He came out and did all of the press about it. He wanted a dynamic young manager, and he went and got him. You never got the impression that Gino actually wanted that. You always got the fact that Gino wanted to go back to the Italian model. And so the moment that he was in a position to go, right, no, you've had your go for 10 games, I'm going to change this, and I'm going to bring in Claudio Ranieri. And you know how that went. So I think for Tom to be absolutely getting to the level of, we're talking to, kind of AD Boothroyd tomorrow or a Graham Taylor, or to be talked in even Jokanović and getting promotion, I don't think promotion is necessarily what he needs to do. He needs to bring stability, and he needs to kind of replicate somewhere along the lines of what Javi Gracia did for us, which was, he wasn't necessarily the best manager in all circumstances, but he was a nice guy. He brought the fans on side, and he kind of calmed everything down for a period and let the players kind of get on with it. He didn't make himself front and center. He kind of allowed the players to do that. And by doing that, we saw the dressing room stop having to fight for supremacy, to quote Troy Deeney word for word, when he came in, because they weren't trying to do that. They weren't having to do that. He was saying, you're the protagonist. You're the ones going to, we are the support staff. And in a way, he needs to do that, but he needs to be doing that with younger and less expensive players, but obviously in the Championship. And we do know that that can be, touch wood, a recipe for success if it's done well. So fingers crossed.
There's a bit of the show that I used to like getting onto, especially this time last year. Now I don't, Justin, to be honest. And we've got 10 minutes-ish, eight minutes. It's never going to happen. We're never going to be able to sum it up. But I find this season, Sunderland have had more managers than Watford. There we go. It's out.
Whoa, okay.
I know. And we've had not a shite of a season, but just it's felt like a shite of a season, where people go, oh, you're 13th, yada, yada. And it last year, I like saying, how does Sunderland look from the outside? Because we were exciting, we were young, we were dynamic, we were on the up, first time in forever. Now I'm asking the question, and I'm interested, but for less positive reasons. We look, our season's been done since February, pretty much. How do we look from the outside, looking in, with the Mowbray situation, then Beal, and then where we're at now?
Well, I've got to be honest with you, I don't pay an enormous amount of attention to it. I can only really speak on when we play you, and you did a number on us when you played us at yours. I mean, obviously, you'd expect a team like Sunderland, yeah, a big team like Sunderland with a big following, to be, you know, up there. So it is a surprise to me to see where you are in the Championship. But in terms of your manager merry-go-round and stuff, all I can say is welcome to the club, mate, because we've seen this many, many times, and it's baffling to the outsider. It's often baffling to the people who support the club as well, as I'm sure you found this season. Yeah, you know, people ask us questions about managers, and we go, don't know. I just don't know. We just roll with the punches. So, you know, I would have thought that with, you know, as an outsider, with the right kind of recruitment and the right kind of management, there's no reason why a big team like Sunderland shouldn't be pushing top six or even higher next season. You know, we are, I guess, little old Watford, and that's kind of how we often think of ourselves to be perceived by other people. So, yeah, I like Sunderland. I really do like Sunderland as a team. So, yeah, I wish you well for sure. But yeah, I mean, managers come, managers go, my friend, and that's something that you've definitely found out this season.
If you're a little old Watford, we're big stupid Sunderland this season, I think. So,
I think if I could, I think you know the way you get games, and if you have a draw, because let's face it, we've all had draws recently. That's a theme. But if you have a draw, you look back at that draw normally, and it depends on the order of the goals scored. You know, if you've got a last minute equaliser, it's almost as good as a win on occasions. Whereas if it's the other way around, it feels awful. For me, the perception of Sunderland is you've had two seasons the wrong way round. You got up from League One, you finally managed to do that, and you've gone on a barnstorming, almost Ipswich-like run to get to where you got to. I don't mean that in a condescending way. I mean it genuinely, and it, especially as a team who supported you, obviously, against Luton in the semi, so, you know, you owe us one there. But no, if you'd have had it the other way round, you'd be looking at this now and going, well, look, we've come up, we've stayed up comfortably. Okay, we pissed around with managers, but we've stayed up comfortably. And then if you'd have built on that, you'd have seen that as organic growth. Because it's been flipped the other way, your sudden comparison is to last season, rather than, and I say this with respect, to the three and four seasons before it. And that's in a way, if I was external looking in at Sunderland and coming in and talking about the culture, that would be what I would be saying, is look at where, you know, look at the descent that you had, which happened, which all basically falls in line with Sunderland till I die, which is the curse that keeps giving. I mean, let's face it, they bring out season three, and yes, it was a lovely positive story, and, you know, heartfelt for the lad who passes away at the end, and anybody who knew him from Sunderland there. Dreadful thing. But of course it cursed your season the moment that comes out. The end of that documentary, I'm sure we'll see Sunderland fly in the long run.
I hope so. But it doesn't feel like it right now. I didn't even do my own review show on Saturday, so there you go. I wasn't America, to be fair. Let the lads do it, but very rarely do I trust them, and very rarely do I not want to be in a show, but here we are. I almost got my prediction right on Saturday. I said 0-0. I feel like I'm going to do the same again. It's always the final wonderful question, and I'm not... Fuck it, I'm not changing it. 0-0 sounds like it should be the right result for both of us. We can't score, you can't score. We don't know what winning is. I think there's three wins in about 20 odd games between us, so a 0-0 that no one cares about and I've got to do a podcast about sounds about right. I mean, where are you guys going? Are we going to agree with me or disagree?
I agree with you, but I think it would be nice for Cleves to get a win as a sort of a reward for getting the job full time, and it'd be nice for us to see a win so that, you know, by the time we get round to August, it's not something like 9 months since we've seen a win at home. So I really hope we do win. I'll go for a 1-0 Watford, but yeah, I mean, 0-0's probably more likely, isn't it?
I'm going to go for a 1-0 or 2-0 Watford win, purely on the basis of, as you mentioned, Watford are a team very much like Sunderland, it sounds like there, who is very good at getting another team's season going. And the irony would be the fact that we finally get our season going in the penultimate game of the season, the last game at home. That's a very Watford thing to do, just as it means absolutely nothing. That would be us. But yeah, that's what I'll go for.
Isn't football great? Why do we waste our bloody time with it? What's the point?
Quite right.
Great to have you both on. It's been the most fun I've had talking about football in quite some time. But Justin, Peter, lovely to have you. Good to see you again.
Safe travels. Anybody coming down, guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Pleasure speaking to you. Thanks for having us on.
And if you do go down to Watford on Saturday, please go and get your head tested afterwards, because you should not be going anywhere near a game that far away at this point and at this sort of stage in the season. But fair play is on a serious note, you absolute mental bastards. Fantastic.